The recording. And just wanted to welcome everyone who's joining us today to the SUNY Library Director reopening panel discussion. And wanted to thank all of the directors who are our panelists. And I'll let each person introduce themselves. Tim, would you like to go first?
Sure. Thanks. Hello, everyone. This is Tim Arnold. I'm the director of libraries at Jamestown Community College. Been here about 6 years in September. The last 6 months feels like a long time. So,
you're up next, Katie.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Gadu at Monroe Community College. I'm the director of library services, and I've been here for about 5 years.
You're up next, Carrie. Sorry.
Hi, everybody. I'm Carrie Fischner. I am the director of the library here at SUNY Delhi, and I've been director here 2020, I guess 4 years.
I'm sorry, I skipped Karen. Karen.
Hi, Karen Gellis, Farmingdale State College. I've been a director for 3 years, but I've actually been at Farmingdale for 21 years this month. Somehow, magically, that happened.
So, hey, everybody. My name is Mustafa Sakaria, and I'm the library director at SUNY Purchase. I'm definitely the green one in the group here because I've only been here 10 months. So it's been quite a dramatic start to my tenure here at in the SUNY system, but that's all fine. I'm rolling with it.
So thank you to all the directors. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through a series of questions, and then two directors will directly respond, and then others, if there is any feedback or input that they'd like to provide, they can also join in. I'll be monitoring chat throughout, so I'll interrupt if it's something that we want to talk about right then. If not, we'll get to Q&A at the end. And I'll keep muting everyone except for the presenters, unless you want to engage in a conversation, and then feel free to unmute yourself and ask a question, but just try to keep yourself unmuted so we don't get a lot of background noise. All right, so with that, I'd like to start off with the first question and turn it over to Tim and Mustafa to answer this question of, will you be open to the community? So Tim or Mustafa, who would like to go first?
Sure.
Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. So yeah, at Jamestown Community College, we're not going to be open to the community. We've and this actually has been, you know, it's been really useful using our listserv, getting information, sort of the discussions going on in the background. But actually, on our campus, it hasn't been too hard of a sell as far as on campus the discussion. There was a lot of concern about, you know, groups renting campus property and things like that coming in for events. So a lot of that very quickly was like, you know, we need to control and know what we're doing first with our students and faculty and employees. And so, you know, it was a pretty easy, you know, to say, well, that's what we're going to do at the library. And we're still working on, you know, everyone has to fill out these questionnaires and stuff when they come on campus, and we're working that out with employees. And we just started that this week. So, you know, when that kicks in with students, you know, that's going to be another layer of, you know, interesting how that's going to work out. And so we just didn't want to make it any more complex. And I think, you know, I have talked to a couple of people on the phone who, you know, I basically emailed a lot of people that are on our list, and, you know, they've been understanding. But yeah, we'll see, you know, we'll see next week when we actually open, and we'll get people wandering in and how that those conversations will go. But so far, yeah, we're going to stay closed and reevaluate as things go on.
Okay, so kind of similar at Purchase. We went through a lot of discussion internally, a lot of very emotional meetings to determine this question of whether we're going to be open or not. And clearly, internally, we absolutely did not want to be open, at least in the big, you know, in the early summer, late spring. There was a lot of cases happening in the city, and we're very close to the city. So it wasn't similar. It wasn't too hard of a sell to keep us closed in the fall. So that is the case right now. The physical space itself will be closed, but we're going to have curbside. We're going to be definitely, in fact, we're broadening the scope of what curbside could do. But the process of deciding to be closed was not so difficult because there was the support of faculty. You know, when we talk about the process that in which the library was involved, it was involved at the provost level with the deans and directors, and they did support this idea that it might not be safe to open the library, that we might be contributing to the problem if we were open, and that could be specific to our library. If you've ever been to the SUNY Purchase Library, it's got a lot of nooks and crannies all over the place, especially in the lower area. The most popular part of the library is just full of tiny little spaces where students could kind of just be forgotten and just be there and congregate in non-density way, you know, against density protocols. So that plus we had a lessening of our custodial support staff. We had, you know, a lot of resignations, and so it was just felt better to concentrate the resources that we did have on the few buildings that would be open, and not include the library, which was helps out. And really, it was just that computing resources, the computing resources, the printing, the scanning that was needed by students. And so with our IT department being able to open about 4 labs on campus, plus we let them borrow our scanners, our consumer scanners, we hopefully will take care of the computing needs, and the curbside will take care of the collection needs. So at this point, we are going to be closed, but I did have to create a plan for what if we suddenly are going to have more students on campus, because we will have at least 1,000 students on campus taking, you know, music and dance classes, while the remainder are just going to be face-to-face. So we do have to support the commuters and those 1,000 some odd students that are going to be on campus, but we have to be prepared in the spring if there are more students or less. So that's our situation right now.
There's a follow-up question in the chat that I think is good that I'd like to pose to anyone on the panel if you've gone through this at your campus. Are you restricting access to other SUNY students? So if a SUNY student comes to try to access, are you treating them as a community member, or do you have a different policy for SUNY students who are not your own student, that is?
I'll start if that's okay. So here on Long Island, we have a lot of Long Island-based students who attend other SUNY schools upstate who might be home. And our initial inclination was that we wanted to support them. And once we did the headcount of how many seats we could really fit in our building safely, it's pretty clear we're not going to be able to do much to support anybody except our own students, faculty, and staff, at least at the beginning, until we see how things pan out. We're restricting to our own campus users. Now, we don't require an ID at the door, so I'm not sure how we're going to know it's them, other than that they won't be able to log into anything. But that's what we're doing, at least for the beginning of fall.
At Delhi, we are requiring an ID. So at this time, the only users that are allowed in the building are current Delhi students, faculty, and staff. So we all have lanyards and IDs that have to be worn at all times. Current students have a different colored lanyard than current faculty and staff. And our residential students actually have a sticker that's on their ID, a special sticker that says SUNY Delhi 2020 residence hall, to identify that they are students that are allowed in the residence halls. So at this time, unfortunately, we can't allow non-Delhi students in the building.
Are any of the panelists allowing SUNY students specifically?
Yeah, we're just allowing them to drop off materials at our book drop, but similar to Carrie, we have to restrict it to purchase credentials only. And part of that is because our holds process would be difficult to expand it to these other groups that normally could borrow. For example, we allow like certain other schools in the Waldo system, if you're part of the Waldo system, we won't be able to allow that. So it really, just for now, for the fall, it's going to have to just be purchase credentials.
All right, excellent. Well, keep us going. I think we could, Andy from Orange asked a good question that, you know, if the panelists want to answer this, it's He keeps hearing that there's some sort of an evaluation period to kind of assess the situation. And, you know, it sounds like that's a common refrain too of like, we're going to see what happens and then we're going to assess. And he was asking is, you know, what's that assessment period as far as time and perhaps to see if there's any sort of consistency. Good question, Andy.
Yeah, that is a good question. And I wish I had an answer for it. I don't know. We, you know, everything seems to be just planned for the fall semester. And that seems to be the sort of consensus time period. You know, one of my concerns is, you know, and I haven't heard this and maybe you know this in your campuses is where, you know, where do you shift if you do start to get cases around and when do you, you know, when do you go fully online or something? Because I haven't, you know, I think we're just hoping for the best and planning as best we can. But yeah, I haven't seen as to how we would change that way. So yeah, and as far as having other students, you know, we're kind of right at the end of the state. So we don't really get, you know, I guess occasionally we'll get Fredonia students in here, but until we get this sort of process figured out as far as people filling out these kind of evaluation things they have to do every time you come to campus until we figure out a way that we can handle it ourselves with our own students, faculty, and employees, that I'm not ready to open that up. And there is a plan in place, but it isn't quite finalized for visitors. So sort of, yeah.
I think we need to assess ongoing, right? Every week, something's going to get assessed. Are your staff burned out? Are your patrons distancing properly? Are you swamped? Are you empty? It's going to be ongoing.
I would say that in my mind, I've got like a 6-week kind of, you know, thinking. That's kind of our typical when we would change our hours, extend our hours in the normal semester. So in my mind, I'm thinking it's 6 weeks. But I agree with Karen, kind of a weekly thing. But 6 weeks is where I'm thinking that's a good stop and really take a big look at things. Sorry, Katie, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. I'll just add in briefly. I wanted to echo what Karen said, and that I think especially at the beginning, we're going to have to be pretty flexible in terms of how are our procedures working, how is our the flow of our spaces, how is that all working? But in terms of like expanding services or opening up more broadly, I think that would be a slower decision. And so similar to Carrie, I think that would be like a month or 6 weeks in.
Excellent. So it sounds like there's nothing being defined by the campuses, but you know, you're using it as kind of a managerial perspective of trying to figure out what your short-term plans are as well. All right, so we'll move on to reserves. This one we're also going to talk about, I think, at the access services question and answer next week. But you know, this is something that we are hearing a lot about. So you know, you'll hear about it twice. So Karen, you want to go first on this?
Sure. Unlike some of the campuses, we are open fully 86 hours a week. We haven't lost any staff, and we're very happy that we're able to spread our usage out over the entire number of hours we would normally have. And also, reserves is our biggest ticket. It's always our heaviest circulation. So as a college that has over 9,000 commuters and only 200 students living in the dorms this semester, we need some spaces on campus for them to go. And so the library is one of those spaces. So reserves is available. But we're doing a couple of things to limit the traffic there. We're not checking out laptops or headphones or our VR goggles that unfortunately we just bought 20 of right before COVID started. We have a two-hour in-house reserve, but we might see that drop a little this semester for a couple reasons. One is that our reserve budget is gone for this fall. If we get it at all, it won't be until December and it will be lower. So we won't have a lot of the new textbooks for September. We usually get that money from our Campus Auxiliary Services Corporation. They run the campus contracts with the bookstore and food services. And so obviously they're tapped. We're also going to do our best to limit physical reserves in the first few weeks by scanning limited portions of the beginning of our most popular textbooks, so that if someone comes and asks for that because their print copy hasn't arrived yet, We will be able to say, hey, if you just want the first chapter or two, we can provide that to you electronically, even though we're not scanning the entire book for you. I have an Alma analytics report if anybody wants to borrow it that shows you, well, it showed me everything that was checked out the first couple weeks of last semester by title, by reserve course number. So I can see what reserve books were used multiple times per day in the first 3 weeks of my last fall semester. So if you want that report, let me know. We've done some basic engineering design at our desk where I'm going to try and share my screen here.
I'll stop sharing mine okay. And you can share yours. Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. Let's see if this works. So we built some basic sort of in and out at our reserve circulation desk. So all of the checkouts will happen here. For our circulating collection, we're telling them to return their books outside to the book drop, and we're going to quarantine them for 4 days. They'll just stay checked out for those extra 4 days, and we'll waive any fines if necessary. For returns of our two-hour reserve books, they're going to go over here. Here we have an action shot of Kathy returning a book to me earlier. They'll stick it under the plexiglass. I'm not sure if you can see in this picture the plexiglass that's there. Mm-hmm. They'll stick it under the plexiglass. I scan it, and then they put it on that cart on the other side of the barrier. So our circulation staff do not have to touch that returned book. If nobody else checks out that reserve book, it'll stay on that cart for 4 days. We'll rotate the carts each day. If somebody wants the reserve book within the 4 days, at that point we will clean them with wipes and check them back out. But only when they are re-requested will we clean off the books that are being recirculated in less than 4 days. And this is something we're going to reassess. If we find this is not working for us, we'll play it by ear. Let me stop sharing. Okay. You can go back to sharing, Shannon.
Sure.
So that's what we're doing, at least for day one. Ready to pivot as necessary.
All right. Let's see. Tim, you want to talk about what you're doing with the reserves?
Sure. Yeah. So we don't have a really robust reserve business. It's kind of petered off over the last few years. So we don't, at this stage, we're not planning on doing physical reserves. We do a lot of things like, headphones, calculators, stuff like that. And all of that stuff we're going to stop doing when we reopen. I just can't see safely doing that. We have like, and maybe lots of others have this kind of like a office space, where people can go in and use hole punches and all that. And all of that stuff, all of that high touch stuff, we're removing. And so, with reserves, I haven't had a lot of feedback yet from the faculty about how this will affect them. But we're hoping it'll be, a better conversation about, digital resources we can use and things we can switch out so they're not relying, because a lot of students, from my perspective, don't really like the physical reserve thing where you check them out for 2 hours and it's kind of a hassle. So we're hoping for some better conversations that way. We also do laptops, and so we're not doing that, although we have been involved with the kind of the SUNY COVID laptop series that where campuses got a lot of those. So we, our IT was kind of trying to figure out how to do that, so we got involved, and we're kind of working with our basically our counseling center to sort of go through the process of who needs them, and then we're processing and shipping them out and putting them in Alma to track them. But yeah, so right now we're not going to do physical reserves, and we'll see how that goes. With like everything else, you set things in place and then you see you might have to pivot very quickly, and you set up elaborate plans and then you have to change it halfway through. So we'll see. But yeah, I am, very concerned about that with items, being handled, nonstop back and forth. I really don't see a good way to do that safely.
All right. Anything else from the panel on this?
Yeah, I'll just add, there was, I know kind of before people got on, as we were chatting, the idea of controlled digital lending came up as we were talking about, reserve. So we were able at Delhi, one of the things that I did get through our budget process was to purchase SpringShare's e-reserves module. So we are enacting that here at Delhi. We're in the process of getting it. We got it through about 4 days ago. So we are just starting to put that through, but we are looking at using controlled digital lending for the fall for the first time. So we are going to tear apart some of our textbooks that the library owns and scan them in their entirety and put them into digital lending using the theory of controlled digital lending. So the physical textbook won't go out, but the digital one will for a set amount of time. We're going to keep the physical textbook. We're going to rebind it. Our print shop is going to work with us on that so that we still have it and can still use it when and if. But just in the hope is that we're able to get things off of our physical reserves because our students do use them heavily. They are one of our most served collections, and we are very concerned about that. So this is one solution that we're trying. We're anticipating that we will be scanning some of those quick chapters on books that our faculty have given us, those introductory chapters and some portions that we'll still be working with those. But and we did put in requests for UV sanitizers here at Delhi as well to try to sanitize some of our reserves, but I'm still waiting on those purchase requests. So I don't know what will happen next, but I just wanted to throw out that we are trying the controlled digital lending here for our reserves.
Yeah, so if anyone, there was a question that came up about UV cleaners, and is anyone considering or is going to use those for materials that will circulate more frequently than you can allow for quarantining?
Binghamton did purchase a UV book, a large book, because Curtis had sent me what they purchased. So I actually, that's what I requested, was one of the ones that I requested. And it does 6 books at a time in 30 seconds. It's a book box. It also does laptops and some other items. There's Upstate, I know, has a UV wand that they were able to purchase. Not sure who else has gotten one.
I don't know if anybody saw the Barbara Boyle workshop that SLC or SUNY, I'm not sure who hosted it, did. But she's from SUNY's Office of Environmental Health and Safety and listed them as not recommended. I don't know if that means they don't work or they're just too much hassle and money to be worth it, but they were not in her list of recommended cleaning products.
Some of the concern is that because there's a lot of safety, you have to be careful with them and because of the possibility of cross-contamination and how they work. So with the UV wands in particular, you have to wear glasses, you have to wear gloves if you're using them because of the UV and because of the concentration of UV that is needed to actually kill the virus. And it's not, with the wands, it's not like a 30 second where the box it's enclosed and things. The wands, it takes 5 to 15 minutes concentrated on an area where I think we all kind of think, oh, it just flashes and it does its job, but that's not how it works. So there's some more behind that. On TC3, Greg says they purchased 2 UV boxes for small items.
All right.
Holly, the book hangs on you put it in, it's on a hanger inside the box. So the pages actually kind of fan out. So it gets to the pages to some degree as well. So that's how the box works.
All right. Well, we'll move on from reserves. I think we could talk about this a fair amount, but looks like we've addressed this enough. Let's see. So IDs. I know we've talked a little bit about this already, but Katie, do you want to talk a little bit about this, of whether your library is checking IDs or monitoring who's using the building?
Sure. So our campus this fall is still going to be very restricted on who can access campus and how many people can access at a time. And so what our library is doing is every student will have to make an appointment or a reservation to access the library. And we've limited our spaces. So in our main library on our Brighton campus, we have three floors normally, and we're limiting access to the main floor, which is where the majority of our computers are. And then at our downtown campus, we're also taking a section of our learning commons and making it available. And then we will be using LibCal seats to set up every single seat. And whether it's a computer station or a table or a study carrel, we've removed all the extra chairs. And so students will be able to make a reservation and then check in and out using either their phone or hopefully with their phone once they get to the station where they'll be working. And so we won't be checking IDs, but we will be making all students make an appointment to use our space.
Excellent. Carrie, you want to talk about how you're, I think you've already kind of spoken about this, but if there's anything you want to add.
Yeah. So, as I said, we're everyone's wearing IDs visibly. So we will be looking for that. We are not monitoring in the library at this time. We don't have a reservation system set up. We don't have any software for that at this time. So we're not going to be doing that. We'll just be keeping track manually of how many seats are available and how many students are in the building. We did request a swipe machine for the library, a card reader, when they were talking about having us have students sign in. That kind of went off the table, and we haven't heard back about that. So at this time, I don't think that they're having us do any contact tracing regularly in the library where we have to keep track of who's here. At least I haven't heard about it in the last 2 weeks. So we'll see, that could change. But when I brought up the fact that I didn't want to have a staff member having to sit there and write names down, or that I didn't think students would necessarily sign in if given a notebook at the front, that I thought a machine would be a better idea for them to use with their IDs, that idea went away. So at this time, as far as I know, there's no actual monitoring of who's in the building at any time, unless my staff would do it, and I'm not asking my staff to do that.
Okay. All right. So here's another one about kind of changing the flow, and so how have you handled changing entryways and adjusting traffic flows to encourage distancing as far as in the space? Katie, you want to handle this one?
Sure. So I walked through the space with our head of facilities and our head of public safety, and we talked about how we could make some adjustments. And so a couple of things that we're doing are, we have a separate entrance and exit for our main campus library. So one door is only an entrance, one's only an exit. We are going to be using some stanchions just to kind of encourage the direction or the flow that people are traveling. And then I mentioned before, but we're closing off our upper floors with our stacks. So we're closing off our stairwells, but for staff, we're going to have designated up stairwells and designated down stairwells so that you won't bump into someone when you're heading up and down with books.
Carrie, you want to give the Delhi perspective on this?
Sure. Is my sound better? I got messages. Okay, good. I just changed my mic. So, I met with our head of health and safety on campus and did a walkthrough as well to look at our space. And we only have one main entrance to the library. We have one stairwell that's in the center of the library that goes up to the upper floor. So we can't designate stairwells up and down, unfortunately, although I would very much like to. So some of the things that we have done, we have an elevator, so that's been designated as one person at a time. We have put stanchions, at the desk to remove some of the spacing. Stacks are not closed. They're mixed in with our study spaces too much, so we have designated any aisleways as one way. We'll see how well that works, but we have put up signs. We've also tried to reorganize some of the walkways around the library with our seating and such so that they're wider, there's more spacing, obviously. You know, as we did in March, we did remove a lot of the chairs, the computers, things like that, so that we're down a number of seats. We removed, I don't remember exactly how many, but quite a few of those. We have also moved our printers. They were in the main part of the library on the main floor, and we've actually moved those into what was our old library cafe. So now when you walk in the library, the printers are off to the side right in that open space. And the idea there was to keep the printers out of the main space so that students weren't walking all the way into the library when many times they're just coming in to pick up printing that they've printed from their rooms or on their way to class. Hopefully that will reduce some density and some contact within the building itself. We still have a lot to do in my mind. I've struggled a little bit with our facilities in getting things in the library done. Our library, they've focused a lot on the classrooms, even though we have a lot of classes being done online. There's been a lot of discussion when I met with our facilities person was, oh, I didn't think about that. And when we were talking about things at the desk, and she was like, well, the stanchions will work. And I had to have a good conversation with her about the fact that, well, our service people have to actually physically interact with the students. And she seemed very surprised by that. So we are getting some plexiglass shields. We are getting some other things that she didn't think we needed at first. So it did take some good conversations. But we're on the right track, I think. We're just coming down to the wire now.
Yeah, there's a good follow-up question from Chris, and I don't think it's specifically for you, Carrie, but just for the whole group. So anyone, feel free to chime in. She was asking, you know, if you're pushing, one or two doors for specific entryways, how are you handling accessible entryways or just, you know, accessibility concerns or planning?
I'll add, we're fortunate in that both doors that we're using are handicap accessible. So we didn't have to address that. But we do have designated, just to follow on, we do have designated some of our computer stations as accessible, and we're noting that in the reservation system, so students will be able to reserve that seat specifically.
Has this issue come up for anyone else on the panel? All right. Okay. All right. So there's already been some discussion on this, but and I know, so just a disclaimer, this was the question that I think everyone in the panel was like, we don't necessarily have a lot to add in this discussion. Karen, I'll turn this over to you. Have you had any discussions about HVAC and just, you know, anything you can add about that? I'm not sure if you've gone on the MERV rating scale or anything like that, but just anything you can add for that.
Yeah, so when the governor first made his announcement about, you know, malls have to have a MERV 13 or whatever, I did reach out to our facilities manager here and said, is this, you know, something that we have? And the answer was that we have MERV, we have equivalent filters in our building. He did not say they were MERV rated filters. Our building is a big four-story building with very few walls. It's one massive floor on every floor and then offices that have some walls on the sides. So we have spots with great ventilation and spots with no ventilation. We have almost no windows that open in the entire place and one front door. So we obviously have HVAC concerns. But I recommend that everybody find that Barbara Boyle video because she really talks in great detail about the MERV filter situation in SUNY buildings and why some can't have it. It's just not going to work, but that they will have filtration and that this is a conversation that SUNY's been having with all the physical plants. So I don't want to try and say anything technical when I don't know what I'm talking about, but she knew what she was talking about. And I hope that everybody watches that for specifics. It was very, very helpful.
I agree with Karen. The Barbara Boyle video definitely, her talk definitely helped in terms of the HVAC concerns and explaining, I think, what, for those of us who don't understand that on a regular basis, what it meant and how it applied to our buildings. My building is similar to Karen's in that we're three stories. We don't have windows that open. We're awkwardly put together with offices that have been added over the years. And so it's definitely been a concern here. We are not MERV 13 either. We definitely don't have that. But they have extended our cycles to bring in outside air past the regular workday. We used to be able to, you know, set our clock to at 3 o'clock, you know, in the summer. The whole system would shut down. You'd hear it go. You knew it was shutting off. No more outside air was coming in. So they have extended the cycles at the beginning of the day and the end of the day to do more of that. We have discussed, you know, our study rooms because they're small rooms. The doors are closed, things like that. That they're okay. That there is enough ventilation that's going through there. So there have been some discussions, but I wouldn't say that there's been a lot of discussion about the library necessarily, or that I know what's happening. I know they did an assessment. They've done an assessment campus-wide. I know there are other buildings on campus that they are much more concerned about. So overall, the library is in good shape.
We are changing them every 3 months instead of every 6 months. That's something else you can ask your campus.
I just want to echo what Karen was saying, and Carrie also, that HVAC was very much mentioned a lot by faculty, by staff, you know, what's going on with HVAC. So it bubbled up in different groups. And so facilities has made adjustments. They're using similarly an equivalent filter system. I don't know if it's exactly, you know, whatever hospitals use, but we've been told that it's at the level of a hospital. As far as on campus for those buildings that are going to be open. And the library is included in anticipation if we do end up, well, actually we have staff, so it's important regardless. So we are going to have filters that are the equivalent of a hospital. I don't know if that's 12 or 13, but that's going to be part of what we're doing at Purchase.
Yeah, in my conversations with our buildings folks it sounded like they were more, you know, it didn't sound like they were going to get that level of filter, but they've got better filters and they're changing them out more often. The building that I'm in now is built in 71 and the system is kind of older and doesn't particularly circulate the air very well. We do have some outside windows and I've been pushing them to say, you know, can we open them up every morning, leave them open just to get some fresh air in, but so we're continuing that. I mean, somebody mentioned group study rooms, and we have small group study rooms that really have no real good air circulation. And I just don't want to risk it. I've just said we're not going to use them right now, and we'll assess later. It just I think if we set up something that says, oh, we have group study rooms, use them, it gives the impression that we've sort of given them the stamp of approval, that they're safe. And the other thing is the same, you know, we've lost staff across campus too, and we don't have as many cleaning staff. So essentially, I think in order to use one of those spaces, you need to be cleaning it after everyone goes in there. You need to have the air circulate and all. And I'm really uncomfortable with encouraging that with our students. So right now we're just gonna close them all and not gonna be popular, but.
We're also closing our small study rooms, but we don't have very many. Yeah. One thing I did just ask a question and haven't gotten an answer yet is, what about fans? We all have fans in our offices. It gets stuffy in here, and we use fans all the time. Are they just recirculating the indoor airborne virus and not letting it fall to the ground or something. And he said he'd get back to me with an answer on that. I'll share it out to the list when I get one. But if they're going to recommend we turn our fans off and we're all wearing masks and it's a hot day in October and they decide to switch over to the heat instead of the air conditioning, there are going to be problems.
Yeah, I'll just add in, we were told no fans.
Fans seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
We are also keeping our study rooms, not making them available for the same concerns that Tim shared, mostly cleaning.
All right, excellent. We'll move on so we can get through all of our questions. So what does your institutional reopening planning structure look like? And then how have you as the library been included as part of the reopening planning? So Mustafa, I'll turn it over to you first.
Okay, so I can speak to that a little bit. So we divided into task forces at Purchase. So there was one on instruction, on student services, on facilities, and I believe health and safety. And so I volunteered to be on student services, and one of my staff who's responsible for our facilities management, she's on the facilities task force. So these task forces were intended to understand the needs of the community, bring that into some kind of a form that could ultimately be fed into the reopening checklist or document that all the SUNYs created. So those task forces are still in effect. They're still meeting. It's will probably continue to meet. I believe my understanding is it'll continue to meet in the fall. And so I did have to sort of make sure I was on a couple of those groups because I wasn't initially invited. So I made sure I was on those. So the task forces are a great way that we're planning the reopening. In addition, the provost has weekly meetings with the deans and directors, and as well as folks from facilities and IT. And there was a lot of early discussion about, well, who should be open, who shouldn't be open, what buildings are the most vulnerable, et cetera. And through that structure of those weekly meetings, there was a building of consensus based on some of my feedback that, wow, maybe the library really does need to be closed if that's gonna be the safest approach. So that's part of, so it was those sort of senior level cabinet sort of meetings that I was part of and that allowed us to communicate this idea that we really should be closed, and there was consensus on that. The other thing that we're doing is basically trying to sort of understand where we need to provide services if we're closed, which is primarily computing and that kind of access. Again, I mentioned that we have these other places that are going to be available, and we're going to be having folks do our scanning or have scanning available. And this has been conversations with IT especially, but that's been separate conversations I've had with individuals in those areas. But by and large, I feel that we were integrated into the reopening structure that eventually led to that reopening checklist. So I feel pretty good about it.
Excellent. Katie.
I'll add, we had a very similar structure at MCC. So our campus had different task forces, and I served on the student support services one. And as part of that, was able to help shape the larger plan for the campus reopening. And then each department was able to create their own internal plan. And that has to be presented to our campus executive policy group. So I have to present mine tomorrow for final approval on all of our plans. But so I felt that we were incorporated into planning at the campus level and then given some freedom to figure out how to best open our spaces and offer our services at our own department level. And then I wanted to add, I forgot to add in the last question about study rooms, is that we are taking some of our study rooms and turning them into offices for staff who don't have individual offices. So our campus policy is if you are not behind a closed door by yourself, you have to wear your mask the entire time. And a lot of our access services staff don't have their own office, which would mean They could never take their mask off the entire day at work. And so some of our study rooms will become offices, individual offices for those people.
All right, excellent. Anything else from anyone else on the panel on that? That's a, you know, a big question.
Yeah, our process has been very similar to what others shared. There was a instructional working group and an operational working group. I was involved in the instruction one sort of at the beginning. And yeah, so it was sort of just a, and then we developed sort of individual plans or individual schedules that we submitted. And so yeah, and then the same thing, we've been converting over some study rooms to individual office spaces. In fact, we thought, because we lost some positions, we've actually been integrating the tutoring service in both library spaces on each campus. So that's been a fun thing to add to the stress level too.
Yeah, our process is fairly similar. We have an academic program planning, an operations group, and then a student life kind of division group that's been working on the reopening plan. And then each unit has also been responsible for developing our own reopening guidelines and plans that we've presented to administration. So very similar overall.
All right. Getting close to the end of the hour, so we'll move on here. So what's currently your biggest unknown about reopening? And, you know, we know there's probably many unknowns, so this is kind of focusing on, you know, the biggest one. We'll start with you, Karen, on this.
I listed three because I can't pick one, but I'll do them quickly. The first is, I don't know how many people are going to walk through the door in any given day. We have classes on campus. But more, we have times where a student has a class on campus, and then right before or after that, they have an online class. So they need to be on campus to watch that online class. So the campus has developed these green zones where they can go and sit and log on, and we're one of them. Are we going to see lots of these or very few? I don't know. So that is my primary concern. The flow through the building will determine how successful anything is. My second concern is, will we have enough supplies? I have grave concern about our ability to maintain the amount of supplies we need on campus. And my third is, will the people in the building comply with social distancing, with masks, with cleaning? Will they be used to complying with these things by then, or are we going to find our staff put at odds with users at various times? I want to avoid that, obviously. But those are my three. Those are the three things that keep me up at night.
All right, Tim, what's your biggest unknown about reopening?
Kind of the same what Karen said. One is just how much use are we going to get? So the administration has sort of estimated, we have the same thing. We have the combination of some classes are going to be on campus, more the hands-on classes, but many are not. And so it's really just saying, what, you know, and we've reduced hours. We've condensed our hours when we're open. But, you know, we're switching to this, you know, again, this sort of tech mode where we want students to do a lot of web, you know, Zoom classes and things like that. And everyone's ramping up all their Blackboard. And so there's going to be a lot more technology that we're throwing at our students. So yet, you know, less students actually coming to campus. So it is, I'm very concerned that we don't, you know, and we're distancing, we're trying to create as many sort of computer spaces that are safe. And in fact, we were just doing it this morning, you know, I just don't know, are we preparing all this? And then we're gonna force people to wear a mask. It's gonna be very uncomfortable. People are gonna come in and they're gonna come in and do what they need and they're gonna run, you know, like it's not gonna be the library that we're used to. And all the staff are going to be, just monitoring everyone if they're wearing masks, and it's going to be sort of an uncomfortable environment. So I just really don't know. Is it going to be very busy, and are we going to have problems, you know, with social distancing and things like that, or is it going to be the opposite? We're going to do all this work, and it's going to be crickets. There's going to be no one here, you know. So that's and you know, one of the things. So we were debating, and a couple of people said that about, you know, do you close areas? Do you close down stacks and things like that? And I think the more I learn about this, the more I think it's better to have as much open space as possible, essentially, because the last thing you want is people to be forced to congregate because you've closed down floors or areas and things like that. And we don't have, you know, in Jamestown, we have more square footage than we do in Olean. But I've, you know, just, you know, we've kind of came to the conclusion that we'll keep as much of the spaces open as possible. And it's much more about sort of the air circulation and things like that, rather than, you know, people going, you know, that was the first concern. Oh, people are going to go in the stacks and they're going to pull off a DVD and then they're going to put it back and we're not going to know which one it is and it's going to be contaminated. So, you know, that, I think that sort of is not really the big issue. The big issue is just people keeping them separated, keeping the masks on, keeping the fresh air. So, but we'll see. We'll see you on the 24th. So.
A question came up from the chat that's it's off topic of what we're talking about now, but I think it's a good one that if anyone on the panel wants to respond, you know, I've heard this question multiple times in different contexts of have you planned for what responses you're expecting your staff to have, or what expectations if someone isn't complying with whatever safety measures, so that might be social distancing, not having a mask thing, you know, so has anyone discussed that as part of your reopening planning?
Yeah, it's come up a lot, and there is apparently, you know, sort of guidelines coming from the administration that they want to share. And that was one of the, so in the original planning, they were asking, you know, questions about what you need as far as PPE and things like that and physical plant stuff. But then they were also asking, what do you need as far as training? And, you know, one of the things I think probably a lot of people echoed this, is that we really need consistent, you know, how to deal with this kind of thing. People who either, you know, say community members are not allowed in, or people that aren't complying, that everybody has, you know, we have specific steps that what you need to do with say students, you know, what are the ramifications of not following that? So we're waiting. We're supposed to get something yesterday, and maybe it'll come today, maybe tomorrow. So.
All right. So that's the end of our questions that are only for the audio, for the panelists. And I put together a few polls that are questions that the panelists wanted to talk about. So the first one is about budget. So I'm going to launch the poll, and you feel free to respond. These are anonymous responses, so you should see a poll. And if you aren't involved in budgeting, you can always put NA.
Can the presenters take the poll, or are you just seeing it?
I'm
just seeing it too.
I think we're just
seeing it. That's okay.
We don't want to skew the results.
Sorry, I didn't know that making you a co-host would prevent you from
silencing our voice. That's really good.
I see in the chat that a couple people shared that they have sample scripts for talking to non-compliant students, or if anyone is willing to share those, that would be amazing if you want to share those out to the group, because I know that's something that I would be really interested in seeing, and I see several other people who have asked that too. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good idea of something to share across campuses, because sometimes it just takes saying this is what they're using at this other campus. Yeah. Sarah, you can send it to me and I can distribute it. All right. So it looks like from the poll that, you know, many are getting everything scrutinized, and, you know, a slightly larger group have already received a specific budget percent increase. Is there anything the panel wanted to talk about in this area?
It was my question. I was just curious. I see in the chat a few people said they, you know, they're waiting on the budget. We won't receive our official budget for the fall, and only the fall, until into September. So I was curious where other campuses were at and what they were dealing with.
So I'll end polling on there. Yeah, and share the results. All right. So we'll move on to the next one, which is the question, are you aware of your campus plans for when there are confirmed COVID cases on campus? So let me poll on this one. All right. And I figured there's no NA, so you should either know or not know. I mean, if you don't know, that's... Give everyone a minute. We're a little over half have voted. Looks like it's about half-half. And Aaron is bringing up some good points of, you know, things I missed. But yeah, so the students, yes, but staff, not it. I'm going to end the polling and then share these. But, you know, I think it's, it's interesting. About half-half where, you know, there are specific confirmed cases. Is there anything for the panel that you'd want to share about your plans of?
I would have put myself in the no, I don't know category, but the answer really is that the campus is going to work with the county health department at every case, right? And they will decide, I think, together at some point, all right, you've had too many or you know, this is one isolated incident. We're not doing contact tracing in the library or in any other open buildings on campus, but certainly within credit-bearing courses, they'll know who was in their rooms and they'll do it that way. But I think most campuses would tell you, you know, we will consult with the health department because what they would do in August is not what they're going to do in October or December. It's mm-hmm. It's going to change dramatically as things go up and down.
Yeah, that's a great point. And Mustafa, did you want to add something? Sorry.
I was just going to say that for Purchase, we only have, like I said, about 1,000 students on campus, some international students. Some rooms are being kept in reserve for those that are confirmed as having COVID so they can quarantine in those rooms. Where there's uncertainty is what happens to the faculty member that taught the class that the students were in, and they have four other classes that they're teaching. Will they be able to teach other classes and the guiding sort of thought here is that, well, if everybody in the class is wearing a mask, including the professor, and they're sort of all separated by sort of density and separation, then they shouldn't need to be quarantined. But that's an unknown, whether or not ultimately what's going to happen. And exponentially, if you look at all the number of places that that student might have been in terms of other classes, you quickly run out of beds where they could quarantine themselves. So there is still a lot of uncertainty, and I haven't been privy as to what's going on with that.
And just a note, I know a lot of, I saw somebody had said, you know, staff versus students. Most cases, if you're going to be notified, like to a campus, like that there was a positive case, they're not going to differentiate between a staff and student. You're just going to be notified that there was a positive case due to privacy concerns. So you'll just know that there was a positive case on campus. That's how it was explained to us. And then from there, what they do with the positive case or how it's handled, that would be different. I know on our campus, positive students are going to be encouraged greatly to be sent home unless there's some reason that they can't go home. But otherwise, they're not going to be required, but they're going to be highly encouraged to go home. Although we do have quarantine beds on campus.
I know we're at time. Thanks, Carrie. But I did post another poll, which, you know, I think is one about staff scheduling and who's, you know, kind of how you're handling that. So I think the majority of people have voted on this, but I'll give another few seconds. Anything anyone from the panel wants to say on this? I know this is, I wouldn't say a touchy subject as much as it's a complicated topic that's, you know, a lot of complexity and labor management, discussion. So feel free to share anything you'd like to, but, you know, I'm not expecting anything.
It's definitely touchy for me, Shannon, and it's my biggest unknown. My biggest unknown is similar in terms of what's the scope of curbside. What are we going to be expecting from curbside? And if it increases, if there really is a demand for materials, will I be able to have my staff stagger more or less often? In other words, will they be able to come in more often, that CERC staff? Though that's my biggest unknown. Mm-hmm. Because they've been very, yeah.
Yeah. I, we're going to be... Point. we're going to be open. The building's going to be open. So I do need to have staff in the building. So our plan at this time is to do a an A team and a B team, basically. So we'll have, we're splitting the week, and half the staff will be in for a couple Monday, Tuesday, half the staff will be in Thursday, Friday, and then we're going to rotate Wednesday, the Wednesdays. And that way the entire staff isn't in at any one time. And so we're minimizing, we hope, you know, a cross exposure if that were to happen. And that gives some flexibility so that 1 week you're working from home 2 days, the next week you're working from home 3 days.
We're doing the same.
We're doing a slightly different version of AB. Some people will work Monday through Thursday and then stay home Friday and the entire following week. So 4 out of 10. There are some people who are doing slightly different schedules just so we can cover things like Fridays. But we also were told that we might not have any student workers. So we haven't factored them into our scheduling yet.
Yeah, we're the same. We haven't been given the green light for student workers. We've actually been given quite a bit of leeway as far as who can stay home. You know, it was basically kind of, you know, fill out the spreadsheet. How do you want to work it? And I appreciate that. That was kind of nice. They didn't really, I mean, it sort of had to go through an approval process, but generally I think they were approved. So we've got people, you know, trying not to mix as many people. And so that was kind of a good outcome. We didn't have to say, oh, what are they doing if they're home, or any kind of, you know, scrutiny like that. So that's kind of a good way to, I'm pleased that was the process.
All right, so we're past time, and apologies that we went past time. I guess this is a good question from Jill. Are your work from home plans, and I think this is for state operated campuses because this wouldn't apply to community colleges, are your work from home plans going to expire with the telecommuting policy in early October? And I think you're referring to the UUP telecommuting agreement.
We're expecting that to be continued through the semester. That hasn't happened, so don't quote me on that, but our union, our campus have both said that they expect it to continue.
Ours too, expect it to be continued.
Yeah, same for ours at Purchase.
All right, any last questions? We're past time, but you know, if there's a question for the panelists,
Rebecca.
Yeah, go ahead, Rebecca. Did you? No? Okay. Anything else?
I just want to say thanks for this, Shannon, for putting this together. Before we met, you know, a little bit before we reopened, and we were saying this is like good group therapy for all of us, because making some of these decisions on our own has been a challenge. So this has been nice. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you all did all the work. So, you know, the thanks goes to you all. So we appreciate it. A reminder, so we're doing these on Thursdays. Apologies from us. We got some feedback that we scheduled next Thursdays, which is going to be circulation and ILL. And there was a pre-scheduled OER meeting then. So we apologize. We're doing our best not to double book people, but inevitably it does happen sometimes. So my understanding is the OER service is going to reschedule, but it will be Thursday at 2:00. Will be Circ ILL next week. And we have a fantastic group of panelists that will be facilitated by Tim Jackson. And then the last will be August 27th, where we'll focus more on reference and instruction adaptations for the reopening as well. And we're still working on getting panelists for that. So. Stay tuned. We'll promote out those, and the recording of this will be out in the next, day or so.